Swiss Army Nation, welcome to your podcast. This show is about you, your passion, and your experiences. Join us for panel discussions, interviews, fan profiles, and so much more. When the curtain drops, the excitement begins. So let's go. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Season 4, Episode 145 of the Kiss Army Nation podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Pasquale Veri.
And I am Claudius Pera. Welcome to the show, everyone.
In a previous episode, Kurt Towns said it best. There hasn't been this much excitement over an Ace album in as long as we could remember. Our own Claudio Spira was right when he said Ace is all over social media. Of course, with this much exposure, the naysayers come out of the woodwork. But that's okay. Some valid points, concerns, questions were raised since the release of 10,000 Volts. No problem. Now, if you want to know more about the inner workings of the creation of 10,000 Volts, I suggest you check out Three Sides of the Coin with Steve Brown and Joey Quesada. If you want to listen to a breakdown of the album songs, again, with Joey, listen to Podcast Rock City. But on this episode, we're going to address some of the questions and concerns raised by the fans, and we're going to discuss with our next guest, a person, unlike most of us, who was there. Kiss Army, please welcome Joey Quesada.
Yay. Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Sorry, I couldn't do it as well as Joe.
No, don't give him any props. You did great. I love you. I just told you guys off air. I've been watching your show. Great stuff, guys. Really great.
Oh, thank really you so appreciate much. That. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here with us. Joey, you know, our listeners definitely know who you are, but if anyone wants to learn more about you, so we suggest they pick up your book, Start With a Dream. So we all know you've been a Kiss fan since you were 5 years old and you had the opportunity to open for Kiss, play with several members of the band, and now play drums on half of the songs on 10,000 Volts. Joey, how does it feel?
That's a loaded question. How does it feel? So surreal. I mean, again, just like you guys, I'm just like you. I'm just like other podcasters, Kiss fans. We're all Kiss fans at heart, and I'm no different. I saw Kiss 1979 on the Dynasty Tour. I was 5 years old. Changed my life forever. I knew at that moment I saw Peter Criss's drum riser go up. I knew I had to play drums for the rest of my life. And from that moment on, it was just pursuing that dream for the next 20, 30, 40 years, whatever it was going to take. Nothing was going to stop me. So, you know, when things arise like this, tracking for the new Ace Frehley album, sometimes I have to go back and pinch myself. If I can only tell that little boy at Madison Square Garden when he was 5 years old, stick with it. Things are going to happen. Your dreams are going to come true. You're going to get to not only, you know, see Kiss live and meet them, but play with them and become their peers. It's a dream come true.
Wow. So, and Joey, how did you get involved with this album, with 10,000 Volts?
So Steve Brown, obviously, is the producer, co-writer on the record. I know Steve very well. I've worked with Steve for many, many years. We do a lot of projects together. I do some Trickster shows with Steve and PJ. I also play with Steve and PJ with Eric Martin from Mr. Big. We do our little side run project with we do all the Mr. Big hits. We do all the Trickster hits. So much fun. We do that, you know, a dozen times a year just for fun across the country. But it's great playing those songs, hanging with those guys. And just over the years, you know, we got really close. I know Steve's playing. Steve knows my playing. I love working with Steve, love working with PJ. And obviously, Eric Martin from Mr. Big is one of a kind, one of the best voices in rock and roll. So, you know, when Steve started doing this record, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was at a wedding with Steve. A friend of ours was getting married. And Steve knows what a Kiss fan I am and Steve is. And he pulled me out into his car, said, dude, you're never going to believe this. I just started working with Ace to do his new record. And he played me a couple clips of Walking on the Moon. And I was floored, of course. And, you know, I took him by the throat. I said, Steve, you have to get me involved in this. I'm here for whatever you need. I'm here. If you need tracks, you need demos, you need whatever you need, give me a call. You know, I'm the guy. And that's really what happened. So a couple months later, Steve wind up giving me a call. Hey, dude, what are you doing this week? You know, you're available to track some songs for Ace. Well, let me check my calendar. Let me see if I'm free. Obviously, I wiped out everything on my calendar that week and made myself available. And he sent me a couple rough tracks. The first thing that he sent me was Life of a Stranger. And he was like, you know, the recording process is different than it was in the 70s and the 80s. We're not all in the same room together. We're not all tracking live like Kiss did in, on the first record and stuff. What, you know, the way it works now is Steve kind of had a guitar riff and some rough arrangements. And he said, hey, I want you to come up with some kind of like Zeppelin type of groove for this. And for me, I'm a big Zeppelin fan. As you can see, I've got my Vistalite set right here. And, you know, that was great for me because I love that vibe for Ace. Ace really never had a song that had that slow Zeppelin-esque type blues groove. And Life of a Stranger was it. So I came up with a drum pattern. And it was a lot busier than the one that's on the record. I originally wanted to do a lot of stuff like in Dazed and Confused and do some triplets and bottom fills and all this stuff. And Steve was like, that's incredible, but let's do one just simple because I think Ace, because this is a cover song, and I didn't know it was a cover song up until that point. I thought it was Ace's song. He's like, I think Ace is going to want this more like the original and breathe a little bit more for the vocals and guitar. So I laid down another track, more simplistic, and that's the one that you hear on the record. And from there, you know, Ace loved my playing. Ace loved my drumming. And I just kept getting called back. Hey, we got another one we're working on. We got another one we're working on. So, you know, it just snowballed from there.
Imagine, eh, that five-year-old Kiss fan and now working with Ace Frehley on his album, man. I couldn't even imagine.
It's incredible. You know, the first night we were together when I did, you know, I did four songs the first day. I did Life of a Stranger. I did Back Into My Arms Again. I did Constantly Cute, and I did Fighting for Life. So many people don't know, I originally did Fighting for Life and Cherry Medicine. And once they got Anton involved for 10,000 Volts and he was available, and he actually moved not that close, not that far from Ace. After that, he asked Anton, hey, are you available for anything else? And Anton said, I could do maybe one or two more. And I had already tracked most of the rest of the album, but he wanted Anton involved. So Anton redid my Fighting for Life and redid my Cherry Medicine. But rumor has it, Steve just mentioned this to me the other day, that my versions of those two songs are going to be on the deluxe version of 10,000
Volts.
So that'll be fun to hear.
Super.
Oh, great. That's version number 8 for me then. you tell Joe, I got him beat. How many copies does he have? Do you know?
You know what? I don't think he has that many. I've been yelling at him and because he was trying to find them in the wild rather than ordering them.
Oh, you have
I'm
to
like,
order
Joe,
them.
You got to order them. You can't drive
You're
around
gonna
to
get
Walmart
them.
All day.
Right.
So I think he just started ordering them now. So he's backtracking a little. So you're ahead of him.
Nice, 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 nice. So, you know, what I love about this album, that unlike his other albums, this is so different from anything else that he's done. And so, you know, what unique qualities did Steve bring to this project?
Listen, Steve is incredible at what he does. He's not only an incredible producer, but he's a great songwriter and great arranger. And that's why I think Steve and Ace work so well together. For me personally, obviously, I'm a big Kiss fan, as we all are. Big Ace Frehley fan. Love most of his solo work. I personally love Frehley's Comet Records. I love that first Frehley's Comet record so much. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm more of a pop type of fan, I like sing-along songs. I like, I don't like grunge, and I don't like this. I don't like heavy music that much. I listen to a little bit of everything, but if you had to twist my arm, I'm a pop fan. I like to hear feel-good music, and I think that's what Steve brought to this record. Ace, if you listen back, you know, to Unmasked Ace or Dynasty Ace or even early Frehley's Comet Ace, like the demo years and into that first record, Ace is very poppy. I know people want to distance themselves from that and think of Ace as Rip It Out and, you know, Strange Ways and Trouble Walking, but Ace is very pop oriented. If you go back and listen to some Ace demos that were never released from those early 80 years, Girl Can't Dance, Audio, Video, Back Into My Arms Again, which was one of those. Mm-hmm. Those are, they're keyboard, they're friendly, they're pop, they're almost new wavy. So Steve coming from, you know, the late 80s rock scene with Trickster, I think he brought all those pop sensibilities back to Ace that I think Ace just forgot about after a long time. You know, I do like Ace's last few records, but there was some stuff on there that I didn't love. And in general, I thought they were just too drony, too
Too dark,
yeah,
right?
too dark. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Too dark. And I think this album has it all. It has energy, it has pop, it has catchy songs, it has blues, it has a little bit of everything, which is, I just think Steve brought a more well-rounded approach to the record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the common themes that we were discussing with Pask is that when you listen to the album, you know, from A to Z, it kind of makes you happy, right? So it's a feel good album, and this is quite unique.
But isn't that what music is supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
For me, anyway, I love melody and groove, and I want to feel good when I listen to music. There's nothing worse for me than putting on music and being sad or watching a sad movie. I want to feel good. And music to me makes me feel good. And listen, if we're Kiss fans, that's what we like, right? Kiss is a party band.
Yeah.
You know, Steve is a Kiss Van Halen fan. There's no bigger party bands than those two bands. So, you know, that's why I love this record so much, because it is, like you said, you hit it right on the head, fun music.
Yeah, it is. And you know, Joey, we actually, you know, we can't believe here be talking to you. You know, it's we have such a unique opportunity, man, for someone who was there and who was so involved. And you know, Kiss fans were a rare species, right? So
Oh,
there's,
yes.
and you know, fans, there's all kinds of questions and concerns, you know, about 10,000 volts, you know, and so. You were there, so we would like to switch from kind of an interview mode to a discussion mode, which is more fun. When we have discussion panels, you know, those are the best episodes for us. So we're going to address some of the questions from fans, and Pask and I will give our opinion, our point of view, and then present it to you for check-in, and then see if it's what we think or not. So
Hit me.
Yeah, okay, and this is the fun part of it. So we want to assure our listeners that we did not practice this in advance, and Joey has no idea of what we're going to say.
Right? I'm a little nervous, but let's try it.
There you go. So, Pask, on to you.
Well, before we start, this is something else I want to say about the record. There is something about this record that really touched me in a way that I just can't explain. First of all, I love the hooks and the melodies in this album. It's you know, you can't help but sing along to them. And you mentioned something on Podcast Rock City that for me really hit it on the head. It's about taking that record and putting it on the turntable and listening it from beginning to end. I mentioned it in a previous episode that I listened to 10,000 Volts. I liked it. I liked the song. Walking on the Moon, I wasn't too crazy about it. But then when I started listening to the album and you put those songs in context with the rest of the album, it just did it in the biggest way. I would really suggest people listen to this album like they should listen to it from the very beginning to the very end and just enjoy it.
I couldn't agree anymore. And I think that was a conscious effort by Steve and Ace. Not only that every song is strong, but order really does matter. The order of the record, the feel of the record, the, you know, the merging into one song from another. Obviously I'm on the song, so I'm a little biased, but I love that the first two songs are the singles and then you have Cosmic Heart. It's, you know, the first three, four or five songs are so different, but yet when you hear one and then you, by the time you're ending the fifth song, it feels like, wait a second, these were all different songs, but yet they all feel like the same record.
Yeah.
It's creating something as you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Now, you know, we hear a lot of comments from fans when the album was released, and one major point that circulated online is that Ace had very little to do with the album. He didn't even do most of his solos, people were saying. Claudio, we'll start with you. I mean, you remember hearing about this? Joey's nodding his head. It's like,
I don't know where this came from, but anyways, you know, we have a tendency of even, you know, trying to criticize anything that makes us happy. I don't understand why, but anyway, no, in my case, I don't think so. I think that you know, I'm not a guitar player, but I've been listening, you know, to Kiss from for more than 40 years now, and I think I can catch if it's ace or not playing the solo. To me, it's all ace. The solos, all ace. That's what I think.
I'm not a musician, so I couldn't tell if Ace played the solos or not, and I don't care. If I could tell and he didn't play the solos, I don't care. It's a product that you're creating, and look at the final product. And it was to it made me happy. I enjoyed the songs. And you heard about the auto-tuning, and Ace didn't play all this stuff. Well, look at Kiss, the backing tracks in concert. So what? Look at the show they put on. I don't care. I don't know how things were done behind the scenes here, and quite frankly, I don't care because I love that final product. And I'm not going to criticize it because I think this, I think that, these conspiracy theories. It was just an incredible album, and I just want to enjoy it, so leave me alone.
Listen, I couldn't agree more, but I can't speak for every moment because I wasn't at each session, but when I was there and from what I know, that's Ace, dude. I mean, this is Ace's record. Steve is very energetic in interviews, and I heard some of the interviews that people I think misunderstand the way Steve is presenting himself. Steve is a mega producer. He's influenced by Ezrin and Mutt Lange and Bob Rock and all these guys. And if you ever watched that Metallica doc with Bob Rock, who was the producer of Saint Anger, you see all the stuff that Bob Rock is adding to that record, whether it's a backing vocal or a guitar riff here and there. And I think Steve did that, layering stuff with Ace, but that's Ace you're hearing on the record everywhere. I was in the room with Ace, when we did Constantly Cute, the vocals, and the auto-tune comments. Is there some pitch correction? I'm sure there is. I didn't see them do it, but I can't imagine there's not. I don't think there's been a record since 2005 that didn't have any kind of pitch
Exactly.
correction, and if they
Right.
did, they're stupid if they didn't use it.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I was there when Ace tracked vocals for Constantly Cute, especially. I remember him literally tracking four of the exact same vocal, same pitch, no harmonies, and the phasing of those vocals creates this effect, and that's how Steve likes to layer stuff. And I think he got that from the Mutt Langs. And if you listen to Def Leppard or you listen to Shania Twain records, it has this, everything is bigger than life. And this record is bigger than life. Every chorus, every verse, there's so much layering going on. You don't know what's happening. But I was in the studio with Ace playing solos, and I was in the studio with Ace tracking vocals. That's Ace. Steve brings ideas to Ace, and Ace flushes them out, and then they go back and forth, and they write a bridge, and they write a chorus, and they write a verse, and it becomes this song. And then Steve, from what I know, pieces it takes all the pieces that they wrote together and recorded together and builds a song. That's what a producer's job is. So all the naysayers out there screaming, "Oh, Ace didn't play on this record," it's ridiculous. I was in the room with Ace playing. Trust me, Ace is playing on this record, if not 90% of everything, more than 90%. So he's there. Steve is also there doing a lot of rhythm stuff. And I know Steve plays bass on a lot of the tracks, and Steve's vocals are everywhere on the record. Listen to Cosmic Heart, the chorus of Cosmic Heart. That's Steve's voice you hear, the high harmony. But just like Mutt Lange, if you hear Shania Twain chorus and you hear a Def Leppard chorus, they weirdly sound similar. You know why? Because that's Mutt Lange singing all the background vocals. So that's what you're hearing. You're hearing layers upon layers upon layers. It's not three guys in a room tracking. Steve's production style is layering, dozens of different tracks and textures on top of each other to build these songs. And that's why you're getting the sonics of this record. That's why 10,000 Volts sounds so crisp and big and full. Whether you're listening to it on little iPod headphones, or you're listening to it on a computer, crappy computer
Still.
speakers, or a car stereo, or a big home theater with your turntable, it sounds big wherever you go, and that's because of the layering that Steve did.
Even if you listen to it, at a low volume, you can still, say that this is kind of a quadraphonic, and it's interesting that you mentioned, all of Steve's influences, and I never thought of that. I actually didn't know that He has so much of Bob Ezrin, you know, those guys that they created this huge sound. You know, it's not flat. You know, it has depth. It's very interesting. So now, speaking of Steve again, some of the fans, they're saying, well, this album is not an Ace Frehley album. It's a Steve Brown's album. Okay, Tusk, what do you think?
Oh man, that one pissed me off. I saw the album cover, 10,000 Volts with Ace, and then and superimposed Steve on it. Ace and Steve on the cover. What the heck was that? First of all, Steve had a big part in the album, obviously. His name, his work was all over it. It's an amazing record because of all the work that he did to it. But also, he brought things out in Ace that I think nobody else could and nobody else has. Just look at Ace's track record. This is Ace's best album. And yes, it's because of Steve. Steve made this album great. He made this album possible, and he elevated Ace to a whole new level. But don't say it's a Steve. This is an Ace Frehley album through and through.
Yeah. Well, you
Yeah.
could I couldn't say better than that. And then in my case, before I give you I pass you the mic, Joey, I think it's a strong collaboration. And I think that's what Ace needed. You know, Joey mentioned the last albums that they were kind of. I have the impression that the last Ace release album, not the Origins, not the covers, but the other ones. He was trying to find himself. Okay, now I think he's in a safe place, and the way he partnered with Steve Brown, that's magic. You know, that's what he needed, and I think that it shows on the album. So, Joey, on to you, my friend.
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, you can't win no matter what you do. You know, in it was the early Frehley's Comet Records, a Todd Howarth Ace Frehley record,
Yeah,
was
right.
Trouble Walking, a Richie Scarlett Ace Frehley record.
There you go.
So I don't know why those are different than this record, right? You know, the first two Frehley's Comet records, especially the second one, I like the Todd Howard stuff more than Ace's stuff. I know that might be blasphemy, but the Todd Howard stuff on those records is incredible. That didn't take away from Ace. It didn't take away. Did Ace play the solo on It's Over Now? No, that's Todd playing. You see him, he's doing it in the video, right? So, you know, I don't know why that was all okay, but when Steve, a producer, comes in, it all of a sudden everyone thinks it's more of a Steve Brown album than an Ace album. No, it's an Ace Frehley album co-written by Steve and produced by Steve. It's all of Steve's influence. He brought all his knowledge and influence, his songwriting ability to Ace, and then Ace utilized that the best way he can to make this fantastic record.
It's obvious that a lot of work was put into this record. Joey, how focused was Ace during the making of this album?
Oh, I mean, I was talking to Steve periodically throughout the whole process, and even when I was with Ace in the studio, Ace was great. I knew Ace, you know, a little bit throughout the years. He's seen me play my band ZO2 had opened for Ace on numerous occasions, and I've been in Ace's company at different events and stuff. So Ace and I know each other. We jammed at Creatures Fest a year and a half ago, and then, you know, obviously we got to jam again at Kiss Cancer Goodbye this year. So Ace and I knew each other, but you know, he. It's not something that, you know, he didn't have his guard up with me at all. So he was very down to earth, super focused, ready to work, always, you know, sending tracks to Steve. And, you know, when I was getting some rough mixes, you know, I was on the emails with Ace and Steve. Ace would respond immediately, hey, I love this, but let's do this. And Steve would write back and I would say, oh, why don't we try this? And so it was always, you know, it was a group effort, and Ace was super focused. And Ace, listen, Ace is going to be 73. He was on the road in and out throughout this whole process. To have, I hope and only can wish that I can have the work ethic that Ace had during this record when I'm in my 70s. You know, I know, listen, Ace is notorious. He says it that he's lazy, but he's lazy just like we're all lazy. He's not lazy when he's working. Some days you don't want to, you get up and you're like, oh, I'd rather just lay in bed today and eat a cookie and watch TV. And then some weeks you're like, boom, I'm on fire. I want to go t 10 days straight, 12-hour days, 15-hour days. So that's, he's just like all of us. It's not that he's lazy. It's just that he gets motivated. And I think Steve was great at motivating Ace in this record with great product. Mm-hmm. Every time they would do something together, and Steve is great because, you know, when I was first called in, I didn't know if I was doing demos or if I was doing real tracks. Steve doesn't really like to do demos per se. He thinks if we're going to record something, why can't that be the final product? And that's what Ace, I think, loved about the process. It was keeping him so motivated. Steve is such a whiz on Pro Tools and mixing and, you know, doing rough mixes. We would track. And by the time I got home, I would have a rough mix and Ace would have the rough mix. So we'd always have something to say, hey, look how good this is coming. And it would motivate Ace even more.
Mm-hmm, of course. Yeah, you could see that. Definitely. You know, another comment that I've seen online is that, and again, Joey, you said it yourself, right? You can't please everybody. Ace is always singing about space and stuff. Okay. And on this album, he's singing about different things. Now he's only singing about Lara. All the songs are about Lara. For God's sakes, man. First of all, by the way, that's one of the reasons I love this album, because I think a lot of those songs, you know, is about her, because he's in a good place right now. He's happy. And you want to write about what you know and what you love. That's exactly what I think Ace did on this album. I heard comments that, you know, Lara's controlling his social media. It's all her. And, well, you know, good for her if that's what she did, you know. Claudia, what are your thoughts about those comments?
Well, yeah, it's a strange world, my friend. You know, people taking the time to write about that. I don't know. I love that that Ace is writing about Lara. You know, I love it. I prefer that much than writing, you know, 10 songs about space and traveling and whatever. So, and planets. So I don't have any issues at all with the lyrics. And then about what you mentioned about social media, I don't know if it's Lara behind that, but that's an impressive work. What has been done to promote Ace on a daily basis on Facebook, on all of the platforms. And I think that made that created, you know, big expectations for the album that were actually achieved by what the album is. So, you know, if it's Lara behind that, kudos for her, you know, fantastic. And controlling his songwriting, come on, it's Ace. You think that Lara will control his songwriting? It's all him with as Joey say, you know, with Steve's and the people who are working with him. But I don't think that you know, Ace will allow, you know, that that his songwriting will be controlled by Lara. Not at all.
You know, I'm not sure if it's the chicken or the egg argument, because I've never seen so much promotion on an album, on an Ace album before. And I think that was part of the magic behind this record, because I think the people behind it really believed in this record. And let's push it to the absolute max. And I loved what Lara did with the videos of, you know, Ace at Walmart and going shopping and stuff. It made him relatable, you know? And then when you listen to the album, it all seems to make sense, because finally, and you said it yourself, Claudio, he's in a good place now. He knows who he is, you know? And this album, I think, defines that. He's in such a good place in his life right now. And he's writing again about what he loves. And he's obviously, I think he's writing about Lara for a lot of the songs. Even the songs that were written before they met is sort of speaking to her, you know? Yeah. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And that passion comes out in the record, and it's happy, it's catchy, it's hooky, it's, you know, it's just so much fun. And you take all that together, it just enhances the experience of listening to this record.
Yeah, I mean, listen, obviously, you like I said before, you're not going to please everyone. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I hear so many comments, wow, he's singing about Ace and about space and electricity again. And Jesus, can he sing about something else? And then the other half say, oh, my God, he's singing about love. And this is not Ace. This is not the Ace I want. Guys, this album is so well-rounded. Again, if you're just taking anything in a box, yeah, you could pick it apart, but we could pick apart all of the old Ace songs too. Torpedo Girl and, you know, Speeding Back to My Baby. If you really, you know, everything is, a timeline is so important. Meaning, when something comes out in your life and when you hear it the first time and how it influences you is everything. We're never going to get that 78 solo album again. Not because Ace can't duplicate it or do better than it. We can't get it again because we'll never be the age we were when that was released. We'll never be the age we were when we heard Rip It Out for the first time and lost our minds. Mm-hmm. Can't go back in time. I'll never hear a piece of music today that will affect me the way when I first heard Kiss Alive 2 and opened up that double gatefold album. It's just the way it works. So no matter what you do, you can't compare. I hate when people try to compare this to 78, or he's not writing about this, he's not writing about that, and Lara's writing his lyrics. Guys, it's ridiculous. The album is so well-rounded. Are there songs about girls and about love? Of course there are. Are there songs that have these, you know, space play on words? Of course, like Walking on the Moon, but it's still about girls. 10,000 volts is not about just electricity. It's about girls, right? She hit me like 10,000 volts. It's another, every song you sing is about girls and about love and relationships and listen to Kiss. That's what it's all about. And that's what these songs are about. Cosmic Heart has some of the best lyrics I think Ace ever wrote. It's about him. It's about his life. If you really read those lyrics, I think those lyrics are phenomenal. And then you have the other end of the spectrum. You have Constantly Cute, where it's goofy and it's cheesy, and Ace knows it's goofy and cheesy. That's the part of it. I just did another interview earlier today, and I was in the studio when we were trying to come up with the line. I think Ace says, "The bees always surround you," something like, "You taste something," and we couldn't come up with what to come up with after that. We were spitballing ideas and trying to come up with a word and some line, and Ace just started laughing. He's like, I got it. How about your taste? Make you taste so delicious, my taste buds smile." And he loved it. It was so goofy, but it worked because that's a pop song. It's a fun bubblegum song. Right. Listen to "Speeding Back to My Baby," right? "Speeding Back to My Baby," and I don't mean maybe. I mean, come on, she's my only girl, and to me, she's just the world. So maybe, come. I mean, it's great because I listened to that when I was 5 years old,
right?
So it was amazing. But if that came out today, people would have a problem with it because they think it's not deep enough. Guys, people are reading into stuff too much. Listen to it. Don't compare it to something else. And just enjoy it.
That's a great point, because you know, at the end of the day, you know, our heroes now, you know, 73 years old, whatever, you know, but they're still them, you know. That's still Ace Frehley at 73, you know. It's the same as if I want to change you, Joey, or Pask, for someone else. So Joey, you know, Ace will never become Dylan, you know. So he wrote about that, you know, and us, you know, being a Kiss fans, okay, we cannot talk, you know, great things about lyrics, because, you know, what do we have, you know, from the band? You know, it's crazy. But you mentioned I don't want to touch again on that, but Constantly Cute, and then some people are saying that stylistically the album is not very consistent, you know. It's because, you know, oh no, Ace would never write a song like this or that, but you just said that, so you know, anything goes. At 73, you can do whatever you want,
of course. And listen to his other records. Listen to the 78 record. You have a song like Rip It Out, and you have a song like Snowblind and Ozone, with, you know, this deep stuff going on, and these cool lyrics, and, you know, this cool vibe. And then you have What's On Your Mind and New York Groove and Speeding Back to My Baby, stuff that's poppy and user-friendly. The first Frehley's Comet record, you have Into the Night. I know it's a cover song, but you have Into the Night. You have Dolls, Calling to You. But then you have Stranger in a Strange Land. You have Love Me Right and stuff like that. You know, Rock Soldiers. You have a mixture of everything. That's what I'm saying. Timeline and your age when stuff is released is so important. This record has all the balances of those records, and I think that's a conscious decision by both of them. They didn't want to go all this way or all that way. And I think some of the recent Ace records were, like you said, all dark, and or all this and all that. And some of those records had some great stuff on it. Like I really liked Anomaly, but you know, this record I really think is the opposite. It's more, way more well balanced, much more like 78 and the first release Comet record.
You know, what do you want? AC/DC, every album is the same, or like Kiss, different styles of music. It's more fun that way. And after all the albums that Ace released, he's still releasing stuff that's different. And I mentioned Constantly Cute because I heard that comment on another podcast. It's like, says who? Ace wouldn't write that song. Why wouldn't he? It's and I think it's fantastic that he could, because he is writing something different than he usually writes.
I was sitting next to him as he was writing the lyrics. So trust me, guys, he wrote it.
Right. Yeah, I saw that on the podcast for Rock City. You guys are like running it together, going back and forth, and that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
And I think I might even have some handwritten lyrics I took that night.
Oh wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And you also mentioned on podcast Rock City, you know, some of his covers. He makes it his own. My favorite song in this album is Life of a Stranger.
Wow.
I know it's a cover, but oh my God, what a song. You've never heard Ace do anything like that before. And again, it's social media, right? I saw the video where Ace was in the car and he was saying that he wanted to do this song and he wasn't sure if he'd be able to do it because of his voice, he'd be able to pull it off. And then I'm hearing it like, oh my God, he pulled it off. Once again, Ace is still challenging himself. He wasn't playing it safe on this album. He was challenging himself. Was that something conscious as well, Joey?
I think that's a lot where Steve comes in. And I think that's the producer's job in any real project. A producer wants to push you out of your comfort zone. A producer is not going to take, oh, that's good enough. No, it's not good enough. I want it better. I want to go beyond your boundaries. And I think, you know, unfortunately, I think Kiss, you know, fell into that trap with Monster a little bit, you know, the self-produced album. They didn't have someone, and some of Monster I really like. Sonically, I don't love the sonics of the record. I think it wasn't produced well or engineered well. But I think a producer's job is to tell you, guys, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
That chorus that you have is not a chorus. That's a pre-chorus. We need to lift it. The song needs to lift again. And I think that's what Steve did with Ace and pushed him to the limits. Maybe Ace doesn't go for Life of a Stranger, even though it was Ace's idea to do it. Maybe Ace doesn't do it without Steve's influence and say, no, Ace, you can do it. Even with Back in Your Arms Again, I remember tracking that and Ace was worried because it's high for him. And Steve's like, dude, you can do it. He's like, ah, man, I don't know if I don't think I can do it. That's tough, man. I was, you know, 30 years old when I tracked that the first time. And Steve's like, no, dude, I'm telling you, let's push and push and push. And he pushed him to do it. That's the producer's job. It's not just to co-write songs and, you know, do that. It's to help the artist reach a new level. And I really, you know, not because Steve's my friend or not because I'm on the record. I think Steve accomplished that with this record. And I think Ace should be proud that he got to this next step in his career, which is this amazing record that probably he couldn't have done by himself self-producing.
That's for sure. Yes.
Yeah. And also a lot of people are saying, because this is, again, I can't say it enough, it's an incredible album, but I'm sorry, you can't help but compare it to his best work, his 1978 album. Can the two be compared?
I don't think so. I don't think they can be compared. So it's 46 years, guys, between the two albums, you know. He was 20-something, 25, 26, and now he's 73.
Difference.
Yeah, that's right. So you know, it's a different world. It's different music, different ways of recording. You know, different vibe on what you're writing about. You know, and no, I don't think it can be compared. I think that maybe because you know Ace used you know as part of his promotion saying that this is going to be better than my 78. But Kiss, they always do that too. You know, they compare it to Destroyer. They're going to say, well, this is going to be better than, you know, in the non-makeup days. This is going to be better than this or that. Of course, that's a marketing strategy just to set, you know, kind of a threshold and to compare against. But you know, this is a, this this to me, that's the this is a great album for 2024. And if I want to listen to 70s music, I'm going to put the 78 album. You know, that's it.
Yeah, again, I think, when I say it again and again and again, timeline is everything. When something is released, it's everything. You can't compare it to 78 because you're not the age you were and you're not influenced the way you were when you first heard 78. Ace, the reason why I think Ace does do those comparisons because Ace is coming from a different place. He's not a fan. He's Ace. So we're fans. We can't hear something new today, being the age we are, going through the life experiences we've gone through, expecting something as good as we felt when we heard the 78 record or the first time we heard Destroyer or the first time we heard Creatures of the Night. You can't compare something now, even if it might be as good or better. I'm not saying it is or isn't. I'm saying it's impossible to compare. It can't be as good for me as 78. It can't be because I'm not the age I was when 78 came out. If this album came out in 1978 or 1980 when I was a kid, this album maybe it is better. I have no idea. It's impossible for me to tell. Yeah. Even like with my own records, my ZO2 records, we're our fourth record in, and some of the stuff on the fourth record I think is way better than the first record. But I hear fans tell me, and we're a baby band. I hear fans telling me, oh my God, no way. The vibe on that first record, you can't compare to the, how could you even think of saying that this is the, I'm like, I'm not thinking of it like you're thinking of it when you heard it. I'm thinking of it as an artist perspective, and I'm hearing how I grew as a musician or a singer or a drummer. And I think that's how Ace is looking at it. Ace is looking at it as what he felt like he accomplished with this record as opposed to 78 and Frehley's Comet and all that stuff. And is it part of it's probably a marketing ploy. We all know that. Like you said, Kiss did it every record in the 80s. Right. Animal Eyes came out. Oh, it's a mixture of Destroyer and Love Gun. Crazy Nights came out, which sounds nothing like Destroyer. And I happen to love Crazy Nights. One of my favorite records. Oh, it sounds like Destroyer. I watched an interview the other day. No, it sounds nothing like Destroyer. What are you talking about?
Keyboards.
It's a promotional tool.
Yeah.
And back to what you were saying before that, back to promotion. This record, I think, got the promotion that it got and the heavy online presence because the record label Monarch Heavy believed so much in it. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe in something, you're not going to push it because it's not going to have legs. It's only going to sell to the common Kiss fan. This album, and I know I'm biased again because I'm part of it and I'm a Kiss fan and I'm an Ace Frehley fan. There was the buzz and there still is around this album, unlike I've heard in a long time, especially in our community, the Kiss community. Even like when something like Sonic Boom first came out or Monster came out or even Psycho Circus. I mean, there was a big buzz around Psycho Circus because it was, billed as the new album with the original four, even though looking back, we know that really wasn't the case. This album has a buzz about it and an online presence that I think can be credited to Ace. I think it could be credited to Monarch Heavy, the label, Steve, and Ace's new social media person, who I think the label hired for him. They've been doing a tremendous job.
I guess I stand alone on this because I'll say it. I said it before. I'll say it again. I like this album better than the 78.
Wow.
But Joey, you made me realize why. I could never compare anything today to Destroyer because I grew up with that stuff. I get that. I was never a big Ace fan like that. I never loved Ace as much as I love Kiss. And even his solo album, it wasn't my favorite. I like Paul's better than his. And his solo stuff, it was good. I liked it. I supported him. But, I listened to it a couple of times and I put it away. But I got to tell you, with this album, I've become a huge Ace Frehley fan. For me, this is it. This is what Ace Frehley should have been from the very beginning. And we said in the previous episode, the solo album was a great start. And hopefully he should have, gone higher and higher and higher with that album, after that album. But I felt it plateaued,
Yep.
And now this album took it to the next level. Just take the 78 album, This one put them together. Fantastic Ace. So I guess I stand alone, but to me, this nothing compares to this one. I just love it.
That's listen, that's great to hear.
Yeah, well said, man. So now, speaking of products and marketing and promotion and all of that, which is very really interesting. Ace released many different variants of the album, different color vinyls, different covers, blah blah blah. So, and someone said, all these variants are getting out of hand, so it is just another cash grab. Okay, so pass.
If they by cash grab they mean it's about making money, it's a business. Of course it's about making money, but we decide if we're going to buy something or not. If we don't like it, we don't buy it, I found it fun going after a lot of these variants. I have the three cover variants, the splatter edition, the indie edition, the CD. I'm getting the picture disc at record store day. And now the deluxe apparently is coming out. I can't wait for that one. I'll get a few versions of that, it's just so much fun to collect. I'm only going to open one. And the rest of them I keep them sealed just because it's nice to have, But it's just it's no, it's yeah, of course it's about making
But
money.
you will have to open the deluxe, because if he has Joey on drums on the two songs, that's going to be different, man.
Yeah, but I'm gonna buy two, one sealed and one
Oh, there
unopened,
you go. You're
you
going to
know,
buy two. That's a true Kiss fan right there.
No,
There you go.
absolutely. And let's
There
see if Polo could beat that,
you
So
go.
stop complaining. I mean, if you want to buy it, do it. If you don't buy it. Why do people
That's
have
right.
a
That's
need
right.
to complain about these things? I don't
That's
get
right.
that.
And if we put all of this into perspective, that we are Kiss fans, so what are we complaining about? The most cash grab band in history, so
Oh
whatever.
God.
So then you do what you feel, it's whether you buy it or not. And but I'm happy that that Ace did what he did, giving the fans the options of buying different things if you want. I think that's a great move, for this album. And this album deserves it, because if you were telling me that, it comes with, I don't know, 10, 15 different variants of an album that is not good, well, come on, that doesn't make any sense. But this, yeah, why not? Joey?
Yeah, listen, guys, people have to understand out there, records don't sell anymore. Records, CDs, albums, whatever you want to call them, today, physical releases don't sell like they used to sell. In the 80s, even 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you're talking millions and millions of records for each record moved, right? Things would ship platinum. All those 80s Kiss records are all platinum. Things are different now. Labels need to make money somehow. Artists make most of their money touring now, right? And the other thing that created the other revenue stream for artists was these meet and greets, right? There was no meet and greets in the 80s. God, I would have paid anything to go backstage at Madison Square Garden to go see Kiss in the 80s. I'd have lost my mind. There was no such thing, because artists didn't need it. It's not because it wasn't thought of. Artists were like, I'm not meeting all these fans and spending another 5 hours doing all these meet and greets and stuff, because they didn't need it. They were selling so many records. They were selling so much stuff. They had so many other revenue streams. They didn't need to do that. So nowadays, artists have to figure out ways to create opportunities for themselves. Touring, of course, is still the number one for artists, and merch. And that's what albums are now. They don't think of it as an album. Think of it as merch. It's product for them to sell. It's like another collectible.
That's
Don't,
right.
you know, don't, I can guarantee you, and I'm one of them, I have the album right there. I don't even have a record player. And I guarantee you, most people who buy the vinyls don't have a record player either. It's another piece of merch, like the paintings behind you, like your posters, like your cutout, right? Like all the plaques and stuff I have on my wall and posters. It's just another collectible that is being offered by the artist. You don't have to buy it. They're not telling
That's right.
you have to buy all 15, because each one of them have one song on it. That would be a cash grab, right? That would be, holy cow, you are really raping us right now. But they're not telling you that. They're saying, hey, these are cool. Everyone is a little bit cool and a little bit different. If you want it, grab it. Same thing
That's
with
right.
Kiss, that new Creatures of the Night, Deluxe, Super Duper, whatever the hell they call it. nine vinyl set is, how much is it? $1,000.
$1,000.
Who the hell is buying that? I'm not, but maybe someone wants it. Who am I to say, no, you can't release that? Because if someone wants to buy it, they should buy it. But if everyone says, no, we don't want this, then they won't sell that again. Obviously, the vinyls are selling because they're all sold out. They're repressing one of the other ones. I think they had to repress or put another one out. So it worked. So the label's making some of their money back with all the production costs on the record, all the social media and promo they did for the record. They got to recoup some of that money. And that's how they do it with all these different variants.
Beautiful.
So we sort of touched on this before, and this isn't a comment I saw online. It's just something that we talked about in a previous episode. Do you believe for this album to have worked, Ace needed to be sort of like reined in? He needed to be given a structure to work within in order for this album to succeed the way it did?
I don't know if he needed to be reined in. I don't know if that's the right way to put it. I think he needed to be focused, if that's a better way to put it. And I think by Steve, you know, and I'm the same way. When I'm doing, I do so many projects, you know, whether it's my book, whether it's TV shows I'm working on, whether it's cartoons I'm producing, new CDs, drum tracks. I'm doing so many different things that when I do something by myself, sometimes I'm not as focused because I don't have a deadline. I don't have someone that's calling me and saying, hey, dude, did you finish that product? Get me that so I can do my part. When I don't have someone else doing that with me, I'm on my own timeline. And that's probably how Ace did his other records. The last few records, he's on his own timeline. He's writing, he's engineering a lot of his own stuff, and he's working with a few people in and out, but there's no one saying, hey man, you gotta, you let's, you come, we getting together today? We gotta finish that thing we came up with last night. And I think Steve is just, his natural positive energy is just infectious. So when you start working with someone like Steve, and I think Ace found this out pretty early, Steve wants to do more because Steve's a Kiss fan like us. He's losing his mind that he's working with Ace just like I was. And Steve's excited not only that he's working with Ace, but that he's getting such great stuff out of Ace by him and Ace collaborating on stuff. So I think Steve's positive energy, when you're, listen, I'm all about positivity and energy and all that stuff. That stuff is infectious. If you're around negative people, you will be depressed and you will be negative and you will be mad at people and you won't even understand why. It's the surrounding energy that you're focused on, and vice versa. If you're around positivity, it's infectious and you just feel better and you want to do more and you want to work harder. I always say, if the guy next to you is working harder than you, it makes you work harder, and vice versa. If the guy next to you is working less than you, your productivity is going down. So I think Steve and Ace just naturally became great working partners, friends over this thing. I don't think Ace needed to be reined in. I think if anything, Steve's positivity was infectious on Ace. And then Ace got so jazzed about what he was doing with Steve that it fed back to Steve. And it became like this ricochet that was never ending that just hit back and forth. And all this positive energy happened. And I think they created this great record with each other.
That's fantastic.
I think it was the perfect combination of having the right people in the right place at the right time. You know, like even you, Joey. So you even, you know, we're recording this episode, and you're infectious too, man. So your positivity, it kind of you know, goes through the screen and everything. So, and I cannot imagine anybody else than you, you know, playing in some of the songs. And even we were talking about Lara. Yeah. Kudos for her too, man. He's in a happy place, and the album shows it. So fantastic, man. That's great.
Thanks so much, man. Yeah, listen, if you put positivity out there, and you know, you mentioned my book earlier. My book is exactly about that. It's about never giving up on your dreams. Don't let someone put you down. And listen, we all grew up Kiss fans. Kiss preached their whole career. You know, what's the song "I" about? I believe in me, right? That's, you know, my way, and all these Kiss songs that are about positivity and believing in yourself. If you create good things happen. Don't sit back and wait for stuff to happen. You know, the reason why I got this, am I fortunate and, you know, and I got my opportunity to play on this record? Of course, but it came from hard work throughout all the years and struggling and doing tons and tons and hundreds of crappy gigs and crappy recording sessions and crappy stuff, but always working hard, striving to do better and better and better. So, you know, they always say there's no such thing as luck. And I like to say this too. There's no such thing as luck. It's when opportunity meets being prepared.
Yep.
When opportunity arises, be ready to pounce on it and take advantage of it. And that's what, you know, successful people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think people confuse, you know, ace needing to be structured to ace liking to have, he enjoys having fun. You were telling the story about, you know, we got to get going, got to get going. And ace is showing you magic tricks. You know, I think that was a fantastic story.
Yeah. It would, in the studio we're tracking and ace is just enjoying himself.
Yeah.
He's not pressured. Oh my God, we got to get this song done. Or come on, I want to go home and go to sleep. Or he's having fun. He's literally, you know, I brought cannolis that day and Ace is digging in his bag for like some kind of paper. I'm like, Ace, what are you doing? Hold on. I got to show you this trick. You're going to lose your mind. And Steve's like, Ace, we're in the middle of one of the mic. Literally the track is ready to be recorded. And Ace is just having a good time showing me magic tricks. And he made like a bow tie out of a dollar bill and just, you know, goofing around and having fun. Guy that's, you know, living life to the fullest and loving what he's doing, loving creating new music. You know, that's what I think people take for granted as well. Kiss is over, right? As we know it, the touring band Kiss is over. I can't imagine we'll ever get a new Kiss record, right, guys? I can't imagine that's happening.
Nah.
We should be thankful that we're getting new product, especially perfect timing.
Yeah.
Kiss is gone and then Ace kind of gets rejuvenated with this new record. I would have never, if you would have told me in 1987 that, you know, in 2024 that we'd have a new Ace record and it would be one of his best. God, I would say, what else could we ask for?
You know, Joey, we can't thank you enough, man, for your insight into everything that you were involved with this great album. And so before we close the recording on this episode, please, can you tell our listeners what projects you're presently involved in and what you have planned for the immediate future?
Of course. So obviously I'm on the new Ace Frehley record. Definitely go buy that if you haven't already. If you're watching this podcast, I would assume you have it. if the deluxe version comes out with my additional tracks on it, check those out too. It's fun. It's a different take than Anton's take. Anton's, I'll be honest, are superior than mine, but I did what I could do on my, I'm not Anton. Anton is the best ever. So, but I'm obviously on that record. I'm also in my original band ZO2. We just released our new record, Begin Again.
Nice.
It's on Kibble Records. We'll be doing periodic touring over the new year, having fun out there. It's not streaming yet, that record. It's only physical copies. You can get it at kibblerecords.com. Check that out. It's so much fun. We've been doing it for years. We had our own TV show called Z Rock for many, many years. Go check that out. It's on YouTube. It's on, I think it's on Amazon Prime streaming. I do so many other projects. Just follow me on social media. It's at Joey Quesada on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube. You can see all the stuff that I'm up to.
Super, super. You know, it's been a, you know, Joey, I have no words, man. So thank you so much. It's been great, man, to have you here with us and spend this great hour. You know, we always say with Paz that we're having so much fun doing this this podcast that we're friends, right? You know, it's not an interview. It's not like, you know, following a script. It's about friendship and having fun. So thank you so much and great work on the album. So fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks for having me again, guys. Again, I'm a fan now. I watched a couple of your recent episodes and, you know, that's why when you guys reached out and we set up this interview, I love to do it. I love your show. You guys are what you just said, very natural, genuine Kiss fans, and just having fun at what you do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I got to tell you, this episode is special on so many levels. Obviously, Joey, we have you on the show. It's fantastic. Second, this is the first episode of our fourth year doing this podcast. And it's, I don't know where the time went. And I don't like talking about myself, but this episode will be released on my birthday. And I couldn't imagine a better birthday gift.
Absolutely.
Having you on the show, our first episode of the fourth season, you know, it's just incredible. And, you know, having this insight about the album through the eyes of the person who was there, you know, fantastic. I just, you know, we can't thank you enough. Thank you so much, Joey. Amazing.
Incredible, guys. Congratulations on four amazing seasons. Here's to 25 more.
You got it.
Thank you.
To the Kiss Army, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas, please send them to talktome@kissarmynationpodcast.com. Until the next time, remember, never stop rocking. Take care, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and X. You can watch us on YouTube or listen to us on Podomatic, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is about you, so please like and subscribe to support the amazing guests we have on the show. See you soon, Kiss Army.